Our gospel reading comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, beginning with verse 21. This is Jesus continuing in what we call the Sermon on the Mount. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her heart. With her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, 'Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce.' But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows that you have made to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This morning we participate in one of the best parts of the life of a congregation, at least in my opinion. We will ordain and install leaders that you have chosen for the coming few years. Or, as we will say later, they are leaders that have been chosen by God through your voice as the congregation. And it's a moment in time when we set people apart. We lift them up with our prayers, and we promise to listen to their wisdom and accept their care and their guidance as they share it with us in the coming months and years. And it is fitting that we do this on a day in which we continue to read these words of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, instructions on how to be faithful. To be sure, this passage that I have just read was fairly long for our attention this morning, and it gives us much to think about. And as we listen just to the words, there's potential for us to think it was a bit harsh and a little bit difficult for us to live up to. On the other hand, there are some parts that aren't that difficult. Do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not make oaths to support your word. On the surface, those are things that we can probably at least try to do on our own. But it's not just the letter of the law that we are concerned with today, that Jesus wants us to be concerned with. Jesus wants us to embrace what it means underneath those words that were written so long ago. Jesus wants us to embrace the spirit of the law. And so another way of thinking about it is to not have your life be guided by anger and your decisions guided by anger. And so when you find yourself in a dispute with another, try to resolve it as quickly as possible. Do not long to be in another relationship while you're in one already. Don't betray those you love. Let your word be your word. Be congruent in your life is another way of saying what Jesus spoke to the disciples and the people that day. He was telling us not to get caught up in the ways of the world, not to get caught in letting the world cause us to react and live contrary to the law of love. Instead, Jesus tells us, we should be reconciled with one another. Underlying all of this is the notion of being reconciled with one another. I love this notion of reconciliation. It's the heart of what we do as people of faith. We search for common ground. We try to let those differences that might get in the way, we try to let them fall into the background and instead find ways to love one another. It's about learning how to let go of the hurts in our lives. It's learning how to realize that the one who might have hurt us, or the one we might have hurt, has their own feelings and challenges and difficulties to overcome, just as we do. And learning how to navigate that overcoming and finding a way to understand. Anger and fear work hand in hand in our lives to keep us apart. On Friday night, I was with a group of people who live in the area where I live in Buffalo. I was at a convent with some nuns who were leading a prayer for peace, as they do every month. And they open up this prayer to the community. And we put our chairs in a circle, and we talked about how divided we are. Not divided necessarily the people in that room, but our culture, our communities, our nation, and how often at the root of those divisions is fear. And often at the root of our anger is fear. Fear of something unknown, fear of being made a fool of, fear of looking foolish in front of others, fear that someone we don't know might harm me. Anger and fear work together to divide us. They keep us from forming relationships with others who are different. They become barriers and walls to our building of the kingdom of heaven. One of the ways we do this is we put labels on people, or we talk about how different they are from us. We look at how they dress or how they speak, and we say, oh no, we should be afraid of them because we don't understand them or dress that same way. We look for other people to blame when we are uncomfortable, and we say, it's their fault that I feel this way. We give in to the ways of the world, and we miss sharing the gospel of love. When we are able to let go of fear, let go of anger, and focus instead on common ground, when we realize that each person is born with gifts that they share and we share with one another, when we learn how to listen to one another and to know one another through our stories, We begin to build a table where there's a place for everyone, where everyone is welcome. There's plenty to go around. Now, when we build this table, it doesn't mean we have to sit next to the person that we're not very fond of, but we still sit at the same table. We still share in the same community, the same communion. Reconciliation is sitting at the table with one another. It's not easy to be reconciled. It's not easy to let go of anger, especially when we feel justified in our anger, especially when we can explain exactly why we are right and the other is not, especially when we have been harmed. Letting go of that anger and the fear that often underlies it is not easy, and finding a way to be together in the same community is hard. But that is exactly what Jesus calls us to do in these words that he shares with us. How do we live that kingdom value of reconciliation? What do we do with the fear and anger that sometimes takes root in our hearts and seems as if it will never go away? How do we hold those we feel have harmed us accountable and still be reconciled? There's a process that's known as restorative justice or restorative communities that teaches exactly how we can do this sort of thing. It works with people in a community to repair harm that is caused by crime. It works with all of the people, the victims, the people to whom nothing may have specifically happened, but who live in that community. And it works with the person or persons who have caused the harm. It's often done with young people, but it works with people of every age group. It's often started with young people who commit vandalism or petty crimes like shoplifting or other sorts of things, but it works too with people who have committed assault and robbery, even murder. The perpetrators are held accountable for their acts. The victims feel a sense of relief for having been able to tell their story. And everyone in the community discusses how to repair the harm that was caused by whatever the crime was that took place. It's a community-based process that changes everything and helps to create that moment of reconciliation. When you stop and think about our current system of criminal justice, it doesn't really take into account the needs of the victim. It doesn't really take into account how the community has been harmed by whatever crime was committed. And in a lot of ways, it doesn't take into account the person who did the crime. It's a system that is built on punishment, and the notion that if we separate and punish the person who did whatever it was, that is what we need to do. At the end of the process, though, the community is still broken and torn. The victims continue to be victimized by the story and what happened. And often, the person who could have been transformed through reconciliation and rehabilitation instead becomes more and more separated from the community. At the heart of this process of restoration is a community conference. And at the conference, members of the community, the victim and the perpetrator, meet together and tell their stories. It's facilitated by people who are trained in this kind of work. And the beauty of the process is that it can work whether or not you are sitting with the person who caused your crime or someone else who has caused a similar crime with a different person, because it's about the community and the process of reconciliation. And it's an effort to repair the harm that was done to the whole community, everyone, not just one or two individuals. I have a story that was written by Michelle Jackson about her experience with this restorative conference model and how reconciliation and these conversations that she had was able to change her life. And imagine what it would do in our communities if we were able to do this more. She worked with a project called the Sycamore Tree Project in Australia. And here's what she said. When I first heard of restorative practice, I thought it was a load of rubbish. I thought that all the offender had to do was say sorry, and that was it. So how would you know if they were really genuine or not? I have come to realize that it is way more than that. To take a part in a restorative practice session takes strength and courage from both sides and is way more than a simple, I'm sorry. It is restorative for everyone. Let me tell you my story. Many years ago, my father was murdered. He was a loving dad who went to work one day and never came home. His body was found 10 months later, but we didn't get any answers as to whom or why someone would have shot him at point-blank range. The unanswered questions have hung over our family like a black cloud. People can be cruel and have even said to members of my family that he must have deserved it, or only bad people get killed. The police were baffled, as they say they can find nothing untoward in his life that would have led to this event. They even called him Mr. Clean. Regardless of what people think, we know that no one deserves to have their life ended at someone else's hand. For many years, though I lived with hate and anger toward an unknown person who had altered my whole life, I wanted revenge. We no longer had a dad or a mom, and mom had to leave us alone at home to go to work, and money was tight. We had to learn to adapt. Life moved on gradually and seemed to settle down to normalcy, even though all of us carried scars. She goes on to tell two stories of subsequent crimes that she was a witness to. One was a murder and the other was a rape, and how she was involved as a witness for both of them. And as the trial dates approached for both of these incidents, they came rather closely together, and she found it hard to ask her boss for time off because she was summoned for a murder trial and then for a rape trial. It sounded to her boss, she felt, as if she was hanging out with the wrong kind of people, not like she was just a regular person. So soon after these trials, she learned about this sycamore tree project, and she thought she might participate because she knew in her soul that she needed some way to reconcile with all these things that had happened in her life. So as she signed up to participate, she wondered, do these people want to hear our side of the story? Do they care, or are they just doing it to fill in their time? So this project was taking place inside a prison where they were having restorative conferences between those who had been victims and those who were being held prisoner and who had been convicted of some sort of crime. After the very first session, I felt at ease, as they were just as scared to come into the room as we were. They wondered, were we going to be judgmental? Were we going to yell at them and vent our anger? The facilitator was great and gave us some icebreaker activities, which put us all at ease and put us all on the same level. We began to share our stories even on the first day. I began to realize that many were like the two that I had come to know and had made bad choices after living childhoods without love. This woman who had been on the outside of a couple of difficult crimes but had been affected directly by the murder of her father, participated in this process for reconciliation, and what she learned was that the people who had been the perpetrators were people, just like she was. Her life was changed by being open to participating in this reconciliation process. The process didn't include the people that had harmed her, but others who had committed similar crimes. And it took courage for her to participate. It took courage for the criminals to participate. And sometimes it may seem as if that reconciliation effort does not work. But without making the effort, we can be sure nothing will change. Let's think back about the words of Jesus that we read. He said to the people, "Before making your gifts to God, first be reconciled with your brother or sister." How many of us take seriously that need to be reconciled before we make our gifts to God? How many of us take seriously that need to set aside our own fear and our own anger to find out what is going on with that other one we might call our enemy? First, be reconciled with your brother or sister. Jesus tells us we have to learn to let go of our anger and our fear. We don't have to just be wishy-washy about it. We don't have to feel all lovey-dovey toward the persons who have harmed us or caused harm to those we love. But figuring out a way to realize that we are common with one another. We have many, many things in common with those we would call our enemy. Figuring out how to do that frees us to do the things that God has called and created us to do and to be. Let us embrace that notion of being reconciled with one another as we join on this road and walk together in faith. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.